This is the Human-Centric Investing Podcast with John Diehl, where we look at the world of investing through the eyes of our clients. Take it away, John.
Hello, financial advisors. This is John Diehl, Senior Vice President of Strategic Markets at Hartford Funds. Welcome to Episode 9 of the Human-Centric Investing Podcast. Joining me today is Stephen Boswell, President of the Oxley Institute. Welcome to the podcast, Stephen.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Before we get started, we'll be referring to a workbook that listeners can download at hartfordfunds.com/linked. Again, that's hartfordfunds.com/linked. And you'll also find a link to the workbook in our show notes. With that, let's get started. Look, Stephen, how does the Oxley Institute determine LinkedIn best practices for advisors?
Well, part of it comes from the research that we do every year on advisors and on the affluent client. And from the advisors, we want to know who's actually bringing in business using LinkedIn and what specifically are they doing. From the affluent perspective, we want to know how receptive are they to certain strategies that advisors use on LinkedIn. And so between those two things, plus we do a ton of coaching every year with financial advisors who are looking to improve their skills on LinkedIn. So through that type of exposure, we get to see firsthand what's working, what's not, and get to ride this big wave of experimentation that's happening right now with LinkedIn.
So, Stephen, of all the things that are available out there in software world and all the things we're bombarded with every day, why should advisors take the time to master LinkedIn of all the applications that are out there?
Well, I think all the different applications have their own use case. LinkedIn happens to be the largest professional social network, and it allows you to slice and dice people in ways that make sense for prospecting. I mean, most advisors know a good prospect when they see one. Most advisors have a good idea of what an ideal client relationship looks like, and LinkedIn allows you to go through and sort based on things like education and geography and job title and all things that could help you figure out whether or not somebody, at least on paper, looks like they'd make a good match for you.
So, Stephen, I'm going to take a step back for a minute. If there's advisors listening to our podcast that aren't really familiar with what LinkedIn is or what it does, can you just describe for us kind of why would somebody be active on LinkedIn and what kind of things would they post up there that might be of value to advisors?
Well, I think when an advisor thinks about LinkedIn, first of all, the vast majority of people on LinkedIn use it almost like a resume. I mean, it's your headshot and you've got a couple of things up there about you, but they're not super proactive about it. And so when you think about why you'd want to use it, ideally you'd use it more proactively than that to amplify all of your current marketing and client service. So right now we don't look at LinkedIn as being a replacement for all of what you do for relationship management or for growth. It's more of an amplifier. So if you're to look at some of our research on what's effective right now for client acquisition, if you look at a top five, let's say things like referrals and introductions or intimate client events or referral alliances with other professionals, any of those type of relationship-based strategies are made better with the help of a tool like LinkedIn that allow you to get on there, make new connections, research people in advance of meetings, identify people that you have things in common with. It just helps make all of your existing marketing and client service a little better if you're proactive by using it.
So it kind of gives me a little of an idea of what common ground we may share so that when we do meet face-to-face, there's somewhere to start a conversation, I guess?
Well, exactly right. So if for example, I were going to be meeting you and we were serving on a board together, if I knew that you went to school at the University of Georgia, or if I knew that you're an avid adult league softball player or whatever it is, I might not reference that directly, but it gives me an idea of who you are. And there may be a way for me to bring up information like that to build rapport and get to know you a little better.
That makes a lot of sense. So with advisors you work with, I'm guessing that there are good ways and bad ways to kind of work with this technology. Let's think about the negative things for a minute. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see advisors make when they're using a tool like LinkedIn?
Well, we see all types, and at every firm, you have some advisors who are using it really well and bringing in a tremendous amount of business using LinkedIn, and you've got some who you would consider I don't know, worst practices, the opposite of best practices. The biggest one is that people don't use it enough. You know, second to that would be people who, you know, check the box as far as, am I using LinkedIn? They check the box because they've got a profile, they've got 100 or 2 connections, and they post some standardized content from their firm. And for that, for them, that means I'm on the network, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be, and it's this false sense of security that you're on the network and using it when in fact you're not, right? So as far as what we're aiming for people to do is to get on there more regularly, to look for people who are people that you'd like to meet, and then we can reverse engineer how to get in front of them, whether it's by way of introduction or whether it's by way of warm prospecting technique. But using the network more often helps you get better at using it.
And, you know, Stephen, sometimes I know I kind of get these emails from out of the blue that say so-and-so wants to connect with you on LinkedIn, and I'm not really sure whether that person really wants to connect with me or if LinkedIn just sent me something because it thinks I'm in a network with someone. Is there a way that, like when people, you say visit it regularly, is there an indication to someone that you are visiting regularly, and are there steps that people might take to kind of personalize it in some way that work better than others?
Yeah, and part of it is you're making up your mind in advance as to what type of LinkedIn user you're going to be. You know, so for example, on one end of the spectrum, maybe you're Mr. or Mrs. Big Producer who really wants this high-quality LinkedIn network that's comprised of all the movers and shakers in town. Maybe you've got 75 close connections, and that's a personal choice. On the flip side of it, perhaps you're Mr. or Mrs. Newer to the business, or you know, 10 years in tenure even, and you're looking for a quantity approach. And that's built mainly so that you have outreach to a lot of different people in the community who may end up being an ideal prospect for you. So making that decision first helps you determine whether or not you even need to personalize things. If you're taking the selective quality approach, yeah, take the time. Personalize every single message that goes out. Put a lot of thought into who you're connecting with. If you're on the warmer prospecting side where you're saying, I'm connecting with anybody as long as I think they might be able to be a client of mine or might be able to help connect me with a client, you can't overthink that process. You're connecting with anybody who looks like they might fit that mold. And either strategy can work. It just depends on what you're after.
That makes a lot of sense. Can you share with me, Stephen, a success story about maybe an advisor that you worked with that used LinkedIn to bring in new business?
Yeah, and thinking along the same lines of the example I just gave. So I'll give you a couple of examples. So on the quality approach, we worked with an advisor, part of the private bank at a firm that'll go unnamed, and he used LinkedIn to identify an introduction target. By introduction target, I mean somebody in the community who he thought had some wealth and who had a client connection in common. He worked the connection in common for a personal introduction in real life, not on LinkedIn, and landed a $20 million account because of this LinkedIn introduction, right? So on the quality side, shining example of how this technology can work. And it didn't work because he was some technology whiz. It worked because he identified a situation on LinkedIn that could be leveraged in real life, leveraging people that he knows and who know him to get that kind of business done. On the flip side of it, we've had a number of great success stories with people who did what we call warm prospecting on LinkedIn. This is a big part of a lot of folks outsource their social media for us, and many of them come to us for exactly this reason, that you identify people on LinkedIn who you think you want to have as a client, and you message them, right? Not in the spammy kind of way that we've all received. We've all had our inbox filled with people who put together these huge robotic sales scripts that aren't very effective, right? So we're doing a little bit smarter way, referencing some commonality, whether it be in a mutual connection or a university affiliation or the fact that you have a specialty in working with people who are part of their demographic or their company. And we've had a lot of success stories with people who have warm prospected folks in that manner, just messaging and seeing if they're open to a meeting. If you do it right, that can be effective. We had a guy last year brought in 8 new accounts in 6 months using that very strategy. So it's just, it's exciting. Part of our message to advisors is get out there and experiment. Try some different techniques, whether you learn them from us or from others. That's the only way you'll figure out what works for you and your market.
I know, Stephen, that one of the things we've uncovered in our research is that people like to do business, or people trust other people that they deem to be like themselves. So I think you've hit on those keys to this LinkedIn, is if I can identify some commonality where, whether it's a university affiliation, armed services affiliation, maybe there's a social cause or an employment area that we hold in common, I think that just gets us one step closer to having a warm relationship. And in that mindset, Stephen, I've heard about this concept of being a giver on LinkedIn. What does it mean to be a giver, and why should that be important to advisors?
Yeah, it's a concept that we hold dear, and mainly for this reason. When most people think about introductions, they think about, how can I get more of them? Referrals, however you want to classify it. How do I get more of these, right? And if we flip that on its head a little bit, and we think more about, how can we leverage our network, in this case LinkedIn, to help other people? We're building some reciprocity. And so if you think about it, I'll give you a couple of examples of that in action. So we had a client at one time, a financial advisor, who leveraged his LinkedIn network to help the client's kids find work. So if you ever had a client whose kids were graduating college and looking for employment, he would make the outreach to say, hey, I'm well connected in the community. Most of the people that I know are in my LinkedIn network. And I would encourage you to take a look through there and see if there's anybody that you'd want to meet. And he would even go the step to have that client's kid in the office to go through that network together to talk about who could they get together with, have an informational interview perhaps. And it just showcased the fact that he cared about his clients and was willing to use his network to help. On the other side of it, all of you as financial advisors out there have some business owner clients or some clients who are in sales. And there's more than likely a person or two in your network they benefit from meeting. And so we think it fits into the larger theme of, you want to be having conversations with your clients and centers of influence pretty often about your network, about your LinkedIn, and how it might be able to help them. Just so that when it comes time for you to be proactive and to ask for an introduction or a favor from them, that they're more than willing to oblige.
No, that makes a ton of sense. Always kind of thinking of how to help others and using that in turn as a resource that could be helpful to us makes a lot of sense. Let's say that I'm getting started, Stephen. I'm thinking about, how would I find prospects using LinkedIn? And I know they have a search feature on LinkedIn. And in our LinkedIn workbook that I mentioned at the outset, you provided a lot of great search phrases for advisors to use. But which ones, if I were getting started, would you recommend I start with?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the worksheet. That is full of phrases and search terms that we did a lot of the legwork on to make it easy for all of you out there in the audience to leverage. You don't have to think about how, for example, if I were going to use the search feature to target physicians, you don't have to think through all the different ways that a physician might explain himself or herself on LinkedIn. We've done a lot of the legwork, so you can copy and paste there, and please, we'd be happy if you do it. Where you start depends on the nature of your clientele. I would make the argument that you would start with any niche, however loose it might be within your client base. That's where you would start. So, for example, if I were targeting a specific company here in the area, and we're based in Greensboro, North Carolina, if I said that, you know what, I'd like to have more VF executives as clients, I would start with a search that referenced that company name. And part of what I would uncover is, who am I already connected to within that company? Who are they connected to within that company? What are some of the job titles that I ought to be searching for? And so even if I had two clients there, that might be a natural place to start. If I had a handful of clients who were dentists, perhaps I look for their peers. If it were just none of those really applied, maybe I look for people who are in transition work-wise. So I look for people who have on their profile looking for new opportunity or in transition or something along those lines, because I know they're perhaps going from one job to another and there may be some opportunities there for me.
So let's say I think that's a great idea, that especially for businesses that are kind of in our local area or in niches where we tend to find success. But let's say we go out and we search for, let's say, executives, and we get tons of results. Are there ways that we should filter those results to maybe narrow down the people we might want to start contacting first? Or how would you suggest, are there filters I can apply? And if so, how would you recommend kind of navigating that?
Well, when we've always recommend you start broad and then go narrow. So starting with executive would be a very broad way to do it. Unless you're in a very small market, that's going to return a lot of search results. But then you're able to go through and look at some of what LinkedIn is giving you. Geography, got to be part of it. You search by your location because most of you out there are not looking for executives across the country. From there, you're able to look at, well, what companies is it giving me the option to select from? And that might provide some low-hanging fruit there. But all along that right-hand pane, once you've run a search, you get a lot of options down that right-hand side that allow you to refine the search. But start broad, work your way down to a more manageable number of people. There's a fine balance between having, let's say if you ran a general executive search and you're going to have more search results than you'd ever know what to do with, or if you were looking for people who fit 15 different criteria. They had to live within this narrow range. They had to be executives at this one company. They had to be part of the fan group of the Carolina Panthers. They had to have, I mean, you could go through the list. They had to have had military experience, and all of a sudden you're down to none, right? So somewhere in the middle, right, to give you meaningful search results.
Absolutely. And so, as I think about the process you described, I guess I think about it almost in two phases. The first phase is getting comfortable with the technology itself, right? Making sure my profile is up to date, learning a little bit about where we look and how we look and how we find people that might be a good fit for us. But once we've kind of mastered the technology, or at least fought our way through where we can do some of the things we just talked about, then we get to where the rubber meets the road. And so now I've narrowed my prospects. I got a couple of folks that I think that I'd really like to be introduced to. Can you talk us through the process of how we actually get introduced to somebody that we've identified through LinkedIn? Do you just find a prospect and then try to contact them through LinkedIn, or is there more to it than that? What do you recommend?
Let me share with you a couple of examples of how that might work, because the approach really determines on the person that you've uncovered. In an ideal scenario, we use LinkedIn as a way to map the connections in our community, to map the connections of all the people that we've done business with, the people we're friends with, so that in real life, we could ask them about these people and get some very warm introductions. Now, why would we go through that trouble? Well, it's a much warmer way to get all this done. People are very cynical and guarded right now, and they don't respond as well to colder techniques as they do to a warm introduction from somebody they know and love, right? So when we're using LinkedIn, in an ideal world, let's say I run a search for executives at VF who live in Greensboro, who went to Appalachian State University, and I get a short list of people. In an ideal world, that short list of people has some that I share some connections with. And so LinkedIn tends to organize your search results by those that are listed first have some mutual connections. You can click on that number of, if it says 5 shared connections, and it'll show you some of the people you have in common. Ideally, one of those people we have in common is somebody I know well enough to call and say, hey, I noticed on LinkedIn you're connected to this person at VF. What would be the best way to introduce me to them, just on a social level? Right? Do they know what we're after? Absolutely. But our research and experience coaching shows us that they're willing to help us because they like us and we're making it safe on them. But all that happens offline, right? So in this ideal scenario, which is how in an ideal world all of these connections would take place, we're simply using LinkedIn to source the information that this person knows that person, but we're acting on it in real life. So if you could think about how that might become even more practical. So let's say, for example, you've got an appointment later today with a client coming into the office. One of the quickest ways to leverage LinkedIn, and this is so practical, everybody ought to be doing this, is to look that specific client up on LinkedIn and to look through some of their connections for somebody that you would want to meet. So when that client comes in the office later today, you don't have to be shy about it. Hey, I noticed on LinkedIn you're connected to this person. What would be the best way to introduce me socially? We love working with people at VF, for example, right? So in a very practical way, you've identified the connections of one of your good clients who's coming in, and if you bring that up to them, the odds are in your favor that they're going to help you by matching you up. Now, on the flip side of it, not every new piece of business that comes through LinkedIn is going to be by way of warm introduction in real life. There are some times where warm prospecting is appropriate. And as I mentioned before, it's a huge reason why people come to us for outsourcing, because they'd rather us run all the messaging campaigns. But essentially what you're doing, for those that you don't have a client in common with, or a connection in common with, I should say, is you're just messaging them referencing some commonality. So let's say, for example, if my game plan today was to go after VF executives in Greensboro, I'd look through that list and I would request connections with all the people in that list, anybody that I thought I might want to do some business with. And that's my initial filter in this warm prospecting campaign. So I go through, I send out some connection requests. For those who don't accept the connection request or never get back to me, I move on with life. I never reach out to them again. There's no need to. They either don't use the network or they don't have interest in connecting with me. For those that do connect with me, I send them some follow-up messaging that references some of the commonality that we have. For example, that we went to the same school, live in the same community. Perhaps I've worked with some people at their company that I could name drop, with their permission, of course. But I'm sending a warm message trying to elicit one thing, a telephone conversation with that person. And so when you look at two ends of the spectrum of how this can work, yeah, you want some warm introductions happening. That's the ideal way of getting all this done. But at the same time, most advisors as part of your marketing could afford some time daily to request some connections of people you don't know. And if they accept, to send them some further messaging trying to arrange a phone call. It's a colder tactic than the introduction. Doesn't work every time, but if you do enough of it, you'll be glad to be building your pipeline.
So if you could summarize, I know you just mentioned, you know, a number of talking points to help with introductions, but it, you know, is there any kind of rules of the road or you know, touching on a few of those approaches, what advisors should keep in mind? I mean, I know you talked about warm approaches. What if we don't have a warm approach? Are there any others that we're missing?
Let's think about it on three levels, just in summary of all this. And if you're looking for a takeaway around LinkedIn for you and your team, it ought to be this. 95% of the people out there as consumers are going to look you up as part of their selection process of an advisor. So they might not find you via LinkedIn. They might find you from their accountant. But they're going to look you up. So you want to look spit-shined and polished online, just like you do in real life. You want a current headshot that's professional. You want your summary to be well done. You want to represent a very polished professional image. Second, to be proactive with this is not about posting content. Even though we think you should post content, being proactive with this means identifying some connections of people you're close with and asking them about it, right through that introduction script that I gave of, hey, John, I saw you're connected to Tim at VF on LinkedIn. What's his story? Right? You don't have to get the language perfect, but I'm going to ask my good contact, John, to be put in front of this person. And our research shows that the Johns of the world, if they know and like me, are going to help make all this happen. And lastly, don't be afraid to experiment with some colder approaches. You come across salesy if you send out thousands of these with super long scripts that are obviously cut and pasted. You don't come across salesy if you're experimenting with some of this, sending some handcrafted messages that are highly personalized, referencing the things you have in common. And we're seeing success with it. We're not talking about all this because we enjoy talking about LinkedIn. We're talking about it because there's a lot more success stories happening now with it than there were even 5 years ago. So we think it's important for everybody to just stay on the cutting edge here.
And Stephen, just one last question in terms of practical implementation. So amongst the advisors that you coach, and I know you talked earlier in our conversation about the importance of kind of staying active on LinkedIn, what's the most practical way you see advisors working this into their process? Is it a matter of time blocking? If so, how many hours or days a week should I commit to saying, is it one day a week for 2 hours? Oh, it's probably going to vary by advisor, but does it call for a specific commitment in your mind, at least until I'm up and running and it becomes kind of normal practice for me? What do you see advisors doing out there?
We often split it between a daily and weekly routine, and none of it should take very long. But there is a difference between somebody, I gave the example earlier, if you're Mr. or Mrs. Big Producer, you want a high-quality network, you're not warm prospecting anybody by firing out messages, you can get this done in 5 minutes a day just by going in, checking your connection request, adding new connections of people you met the previous day, if there's anybody important you want to add, very, very manageable for them. If you're somebody who's looking to really go all in and say that I'm going to be firing out a lot of warm prospecting messages, maybe you're up to 20 to 30 minutes a day, but that's about the max that you'd want to spend on it. I mean, if nothing else came out of that, you'd love to spend just a little bit of time in preparation for every client or COI meeting on LinkedIn, looking through their connections for anybody you want to reference to them.
Well, Stephen, thanks very much for your time today. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing some of these insights.
Yeah, John, anytime. Enjoyed speaking with you about it. It's one of our favorite topics.
Folks, Stephen Boswell, president of the Oxley Institute. And again, I'd remind you all to take a look in our show notes for our workbook on hartfordfunds.com/LinkedIn for a summary of some of the techniques and some of the ideas that Stephen covered today. And with that, we thank you, and we'll look forward to speaking with you on our next podcast. Thanks very much.
This podcast is intended for use by financial professionals or in conjunction with the advice of a financial professional. It is intended to be educational in nature and should not be construed as individual investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, or hold any security or to adopt any investment strategy. It does not constitute legal or tax advice or fiduciary advice pursuant to ERISA rules.
The Oxley Institute is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Hartford Funds. Prior to using LinkedIn or implementing any of the strategies referenced in this presentation, please consult with your firm's legal and compliance teams about social media policies and required participation in social media programs.